Good afternoon. Welcome to this afternoon's NAESP Women in Leadership webinar on the future of learning emerging from the pandemic better than normal. At this time, I'd like to introduce NAESP's Associate Executive Director for Professional Learning, Dr. Gracie Branch. Hi, Gracie.
Hi, Honor, and good afternoon, everyone. I am so honored to get to introduce our guest speaker today. Dr. Lou Settles-Young is a clinical associate professor in the Department of Educational Leadership Studies and the executive director of the University of Kentucky Center for Next Generation Leadership. Dr. Young is the program faculty chair for the University of Kentucky Principal Preparation Program, and she also teaches in the Superintendent Certification Program. Before coming to the University of Kentucky, Dr. Young has served as a chief academic officer. She's also served as a superintendent. She earned principal and superintendent certifications from the University of Kentucky, and she holds a doctorate in education leadership from Northern Kentucky University. She also has been awarded many honors. She was selected as Kentucky's 2012 Superintendent of the Year, and in December of 2019, Dr. Young was appointed to the Kentucky Board of Education by Governor Andy Beshear, and she became board chair in April 2020. She is actively involved with the Kentucky Association of School Administrators and the Kentucky Association of School Superintendents. And we're so glad that you're with us today, Dr. Young, to kick off our webinar series on women in leadership.
Thank you so much, Gracie, and many thanks to Honor who helped me get ready for today. I'm honored to be here, delighted to spend some time with Women in Leadership and the National Association for Elementary School Principals. Thank you. So I think we're ready to go ahead and get started. The conversation that I've had with Gracie and Honor has been to think about the reflections and observations that my colleagues and I at the UK Center for Next Generation Leadership have discussed over the last few months since most of us left school in person around mid-March. And as I start, I told Honor that I really wanted to spend just a few minutes giving you guys a virtual standing ovation for all the work that you did last spring to finish out a school year like we would never have anticipated before. All the work that you did over summer to support your teachers, your students, and their families, and then all of the work that you're doing even today as we get ready to move forward into the fall in a very unknown environment. A really, really big standing ovation to you. Thank you for the work that you do. Know that it does not go unnoticed or unappreciated, even though I'm sure on some really long days, it feels differently. And so just want to thank you for that. I like to start sometimes with my why, and this little fella is my why these days. This is Ellis. He's 20 months old. He loves to read. He loves to play outside, and I think he's going to be in the graduating class of 2037 or something like that. I haven't actually counted on my fingers. But as we have this conversation, I know many of you have children and grandchildren of your own, and you certainly have hundreds and thousands of children in your charge at your schools. But I think it's always a wonderful way, especially when we're having a convening of women in leadership, to remind us that our feminist side, our nurturing side, is often a big part of the way we make decisions, the way we reflect on experiences, and then resiliently move forward. So there's a little picture of my sweet Ellis. I would also like to note that we are going to be monitoring the chat. If you have questions as they come up, feel free to type them into the chat. But I also have three chatter breaks scheduled throughout the presentation where I'm hopefully will encourage you guys to engage with one another in the chat feed around some questions to think about as we move forward. So you saw that the title was Emerging from the Pandemic Better Than Normal. So we have, we've come through the first phase from March to May where we survived a pivot to virtual instruction all across this country. What an amazing job teachers and leaders did to get us through that 6 or 8 week period where we were able to support kids wherever they were as well as we possibly could. We've come through that survival mode. We've now kind of pivoted to the place where we have to decide how do we manage within this environment. But what I want to do today is to take some time thinking about what are those silver linings that we might be able to capture from a terrible experience. But what is it about this pandemic that we have learned as leaders that will sustain us forward? So Ron Heifetz talks about going up on the balcony as leaders to look down on the work that we do as if we were orchestra conductors. So for the next 45 minutes or so, I want us to just go up on the balcony and think about the lessons that we are learning. Better than normal must be our goal. I hear so many people lament, let's just get back to normal. But I'm really trying to encourage school leaders that I work with, including my own students who are studying to be principals and superintendents, to encourage them to have a bigger vision, a more important vision than just getting back to normal. And for me, I've been saying that looks like better than normal. Normal, very frankly, just wasn't good enough. And I mean no disrespect, and I love public educators and public schools, and I have a keen understanding of the challenges that we all face in our schools today. But business as usual for us still included a lot of inequitable access and opportunities. Some kids still had better school experiences than others. Achievement gaps remain. They are pernicious. They are intractable. They are very difficult. So we can't think about back to normal if we don't recognize the fact that those achievement gaps still exist. And frankly, too few students make a successful transition to post-secondary. And I know that you as elementary school leaders, middle school leaders, and others who are on the webinar today understand that that successful transition to post-secondary certainly starts at home. We inherit it very quickly in schools in pre-K and primary and intermediate and beyond. So to me, those were the problems with normal, and that's why I think we've got to get to better than normal. And in order to do that, we need to be guided by science. And what I mean by that, I'm hoping to illustrate in a video here in just a moment from Edutopia. But what we know more now than we've ever known before about the science of learning, the neuroscience that happens for kids inside their brains that impacts who they are as people. And so when we think about what better than normal should be, let's first go to the science of that. I am hoping that I will be able to share this video link with you. If not, we are going to listen to the audio only. I might try once to see how that goes. If not, we'll rely on the audio. But you'll be hearing from, in particular, one I want you to know is from Linda Darling Hammond from Stanford University. She's also the chair of the California Board of Education and a researcher and scholar that I respect a lot. And so in this video, you will hear Linda as the second woman's voice in the video talking about what we know about teaching and learning. So rather than disrupting the flow of the webinar, I'm going to head and click the link. If you do not see the video, you will be able to hear the audio, and I think that will suffice.
The Science of Learning and Development Initiative came together to answer a question. What science should we pay attention to in order to understand how learning happens?
Have a good day.
The Science of Learning and Development is really an attempt to synthesize a huge body of knowledge that's accumulated over many, many years from the learning sciences, from psychology and anthropology and brain science, and put all of that together and understand how people, in fact, develop.
And what else?
And how they learn.
There are a few core principles that define all of human development. The first is malleability, the unique property of the brain to change in response to relationships and experiences. Neural tissue is the most susceptible to change of any tissue in the human body. When children are born, their brains are not fully developed. The development of the brain actually continues into young adulthood. It is relationships and experiences that drive the development of the brain. If children have the experience of adversity, they will have uneven development of foundational skills like self-regulation, relationship skills that are prerequisites for more complex skills like perseverance and self-direction. These are the children who are at risk to fall further and further behind.
I'll pause just briefly here to let you know I'm going to share about 2.5 more minutes of the video and highlight another element of the science of learning that we're going to be talking about, and then we'll move back to the slide deck. I also posted a link to this Edutopia video in the chat, so you may want to make a copy of that if this resonates with you as well.
What's most interesting is that a child can become a productive and engaged learner from any developmental starting point as long as we intentionally build those skills.
Turn to your table group and discuss this. Come up with a statement.
When we're able to combine social, emotional, affective, and cognitive development together, we are creating many, many more interconnections in the developing brain that enable children to accelerate learning and development.
You've got this, guys! You got this!
As educators, we have an extraordinary opportunity to shape the developing brains of children and to create that kind of stimulus that drives the integration of the brain.
Life isn't all about going at it alone. We're there to support you when you don't necessarily have the skills or tools that you need.
The science of learning and development tells us that school needs to organize for strong relationships. Thank you, baby. When a strong relationship exists with a teacher, with a mentor, with an advisor, with a school administrator, it actually can reverse the effects of adverse experiences. Children are amazingly resilient if they get that opportunity for attachment, for comfort, and for problem solving with a caring adult.
So that's the money shot from the video. Linda Darlingham in there talking about the amazing resilience that kids demonstrate very naturally, as their tiny human selves often demonstrate, and especially when we are attentive to their needs in terms of experiences and relationships. So I have been touting this video now for the past few months as just a great short primer about the work that we know and grounding it in the science and the research that Linda Darlingham and Dr. Cantor's teams bring to the table. So I want to move forward with that notion that the malleable brain does rely on relationships and experiences. So, of course, Gracie, Honor, and I don't know what all of your contexts are for entering school again this fall, but some of you will be back in person, face-to-face, perhaps with full classrooms, perhaps with half classrooms. Some of you will be virtual. Others of you will be hybrid, which includes a combination of in-person school, perhaps one day or one week, and virtual school on alternating days or weeks. I would contend, and I hope that you find encouraging as you're preparing for the 2020-21 school year, that you know that building these relationships and providing these high-quality experiences are still absolutely within your reach. And I know that's the kind of work that you will be doing with your teachers this fall as we think about, again, whatever school looks like for you this fall, how we can really capitalize on relationships and experiences for all kids. You heard Dr. Cantor say that if children have the experience of adversity, they will likely experience the uneven development of these foundational skills. I would contend that this fall, post-pandemic, many students, more than usual, certainly have experienced some level of adversity and even trauma. Just the loss of socialization and the school experiences from the spring, the lack of closure, saying goodbye to their beloved third grade teacher, all of those things have brought their own level of trauma. Plus, students hear all about the pandemic, of course, and internalize a lot of that strife as an adverse experience. So I have been talking a lot with school superintendents and principals about how we can take that into account this fall as we move forward, as I'm sure you have too. Those foundational skills that can be adversely affected, like self-regulation and relationship skills, in turn have a more debilitating impact on the development of complex processing and executive skills like perseverance and self-direction. So perhaps more than ever before, in the age of during COVID and post-COVID, we're going to have to contend with those experiences. Linda Darling-Hammond goes on, though, to remind us where I ended the video early, that children are amazingly resilient. If they have that opportunity to form attachments, to be comforted, and to be challenged to problem solve with a caring adult. So back to the video, if you have a chance to share with others, I would encourage you to do that. But think about how attainable that is. If we provide them the opportunity for this level of attachment in person, virtually, or a combination of those, then we have a real fighting shot to ameliorate the negative experiences that our students have suffered through the past few months. So my question is, what does that mean then to look like better than normal? My team at the University of Kentucky Center for Next Generation Leadership has been investigating over the last 10 years what a better than normal schooling experience would entail and how we get there. So three places I kind of want to land in our conversation today as we talk about the work at my center is what it looks like to leverage better and more consistent technology tools for learning, what it looks like to have deeper, more student-centered learning opportunities and experiences for all children, and what it means then to wrap those around stronger relationships and supports for all kids. I don't ever intend to overly simplify very complex leadership challenges that you face as principals today, but really, if we can leverage the tools, deepen the learning, and build stronger, more supportive relationships, I think we are beginning to glimpse the alchemy of what school could be for all kids post-pandemic. So one of the things I want to really quickly run through this part, but my colleague, Dr. Justin Baffin, is an expert in school technology leadership, and we've been doing a lot of work around Kentucky to help folks really clarify and hone in on some minimally viable digital learning tools. He laughs when he shares this pedagogy wheel. This is version 5.0 of what all of the technology opportunities are in schools today. It's comical when you see how dense and complex that wheel is. And then we pair it with this slide to say, here's what the average school technology conference looks like these days. It's a lot of stuff. And you as leaders are determining all the time how to allocate very scarce resources in order to get just-in-time technology at the best cost to best meet the needs of your learners. It's too much. So what we've been promoting is that we need to get really clear about a minimally viable digital learning platform, and these icons are super helpful. That looks like internet access for all kids at home and at school, a device for each kid, a Chromebook for older kids, tablets for younger kids, but a device. It used to be nice to have a tablet in the home. It's now almost a school supply necessity. I kind of wish I hadn't said almost. Access to online productivity software, whether it's Google Apps, Microsoft 365, but some way that kids can use their devices to design and to produce and to learn. A learning management system. That will help you at the school level to organize the digital learning experience for all of your kids, hybrid, virtual, or just ongoing learning in a digital way from home and from school in the future. And then lastly, just what we're doing right now, a video platform to be able to connect kids and families. When you pare it down to these minimally viable elements, then that big picture of chaos and overwhelm becomes much more manageable. So NAESP principles, we all need to focus on delivering these minimal elements to every child as soon as possible. My worst fear is that this pandemic will result in an increased digital divide amongst children and families based on socioeconomic status, as well as a real loss of learning over time for those kids who have been significantly marginalized and underserved in the system all along. And I know you share that same kind of nightmare moving forward. So we've reached our first chatter break. And so I thought we would just give us a chance for you guys to access the chat. Make sure you have chosen the pull-down menu that says all panelists and attendees so you can chat with one another here for a few minutes. Honor's going to help me monitor that as well. But just share with one another, what minimum ed tech are you guys using for learning in your schools today? It might be apps, it might be platforms, it may be devices. But let's populate the chat here for a few minutes with some of those ideas, please.
All right, we had a few that came in earlier. Let's see if you'll use the chat box to write that in. What kind of technology do you use, right?
Yes, minimum ed tech that you are using for learning at your schools. This is like a swap meet. All right, thanks, Will. Will broke the ice for us and just put it right out there. Google Classroom. We've got Zoom and Chromebooks. Yay, Seesaw. I've been hearing lots of good things about that. Nearpod. I've been hearing a lot about that as well. We've got Epic, Mayan, Khan. Interesting. I didn't know about Khan at the elementary level. That's awesome. Productivity suites like Microsoft Office 365. Many of your states probably have made those available to all of your students and all of your teachers. iPads, Chromebooks, ClassDojo, Schoology, excellent. So feel free to continue to put that in there, but be thinking about what I don't want to do is perpetuate this notion that you need all of this stuff, but thinking about the decisions that you've made as leaders about how to invest in technology dollars to ensure that students are having a really good experience in online settings or in hybrid settings. So thank you for that. To pivot only slightly, because I really do believe that is one of the silver linings that we will experience post-pandemic, is that people will be much more discerning about their use of technology and choice of tools, as well as their deployment of those tools to students. But I also want to remind you that these are, in fact, just tools. Learning requires a lot more. While I work with a whole lot of great tech leaders, none of us ascribe to the notion that we don't need humans, people with skin on, to help with the learning process. It is a very social experience, learning. It's complex. It's messy. So we need more than that. We need to not only upgrade the technology in schools. Yes, that's what we were just talking about. But we also, that's necessary, but it's not sufficient. Not only do we need to upgrade the technology that we make available in schools, but we need to be thinking about upgrading the technology of schools. Upgrading technology that leverages relationships and experiences that we know support the malleable learning brain of children. So when we think about crafting systems and opportunities, those must be equitable, and they must provide deeper learning experiences for all of our kids. So I want to spend some time moving forward exploring what these equitable, deeper learning experiences really look like. Our team calls them the Next Gen 9, and there's really nothing magical about these. This is just becoming a curation of the research and practice that we see across the Commonwealth of Kentucky, along with partners in the deeper learning movement across the country. And I have included my website, our website here, www.lead.school. That's simple, lead.school. And if you go to /NextGen9, you can find a lot more information about these. But I want to take you through an overview so you can see how these come together. What do these deeper learning experiences entail? And on each of these slides, I'm suggesting a pandemic pro tip. If one of the things you really hope that you can take away from today's webinar is a list of some things that your teachers can be doing in their classrooms with their kids and support from their families, I hope these pandemic pro tips turn out to be a good takeaway for you. Of the NextGen 9 high quality learning experience in a post-pandemic world, I believe will look like promulgating graduate competencies for all kids in our school district. And that includes the littles that you guys serve at pre-K, primary, and intermediate as well. This work is happening all around the country, and I value it so much because if you think about old school kinds of standards and courses, we think about a transcript where we identify what kids know and can do based on the math classes they've taken, the science classes they've taken, et cetera. And while the academic part of what we do is incredibly important and those outcomes remain important, I would also contend that in this new 21st century era, next-gen learning includes clarity around big, transcendent, essential skills. In this picture, I have a copy of a portrait of a graduate. This is language that we use in the deeper learning circles a lot. We have many states now that use portrait or profile of a graduate at the state level even to begin to explain and describe what kinds of outcomes we want for all kids. So this one comes from a tiny little school district in Kentucky, Fort Thomas Schools. The superintendent there is very dynamic and is very focused on ensuring that all Fort Thomas students by the end of primary, end of intermediate, end of middle, and end of high school are demonstrating their ability, their competencies around courageous leadership, becoming empathetic collaborators, global communicators, creative problem solvers, and curious and critical thinkers. And you can see some unpacking of that underneath. I love the curious and critical thinker column where she talks about engaging students' wonder through discovery, reasoning, changing perspectives, broadening perspectives, and reflection. Those are things that when we talk to families and you say, what do you really want when your kids leave elementary school, middle school, or high school? Sometimes they talk about, you know, they want them to be good at math and they want them to be really good readers and on college level reading levels, that kind of thing. But more often than not, they want their kids to be well and healthy, to be thinkers, communicators, problem solvers, collaborators. It becomes pretty unanimous when we talk to folks about what it is they really want for their kids, and these competencies rule the day. And then when we talk to business and industry, what do you really want in your employees of the future? They say the same thing. Now, sometimes they say, I just want them to show up drug-free. Of course, we want that too. But that's part of being well and healthy, which is embedded across these competencies. So portrait of a graduate is a big part of the future that we envision. And notice the pandemic pro tip here. So how do we move this idea of big 21st century essential skills forward? Documenting, rewarding, and giving credit for passion projects, whether they're completed inside school, outside school, in scouts, at youth group, on granddad's farm, whatever that looks like, really rewarding learning that leads kids to demonstrate their ability to solve problems and to think critically and communicate their own learning. So there's a pro tip there. I know how many elementary teachers have embraced the notion of passion projects, and I always jokingly say passion projects are the gateway drug to wall-to-wall project-based learning. And so I think it's a wonderful way to get kids really relevant and interested in the work that they're doing. In addition to framing things around a graduate profile, really getting clear as a school and a community and a school district about what we want for all kids, then those deeper learning pedagogies kick in. And for me, this is the most exciting part, and I bet for some of you as elementary principals, you feel the same way. This is where we begin looking at inquiry, lots of project-based learning, student self-directed passion projects, investigations, research at every level. That's what deeper learning pedagogies are, quite simply. I have a picture here of a tiny little district in Kentucky called Eminence. It's a one-building school district with preschool through 12th grade. And here's a student who was Google mapping her city for Google Earth a few years ago. So that level of engagement in real-world problem-solving and investigation is what deeper learning pedagogies are all about. We've always done this really well for some kids. So my challenge to you as school leaders, as we go into 2020-21, and as we come out on the other side of this pandemic, is to think about ways that you can influence the conditions at your school, in your homes, and across the community for kids to engage in inquiry at its purest form. And I do mean all kids. Resist the urge of some people who would contend that you earn your way to deeper learning, but instead it is for all children. And it's a game changer for kiddos with disabilities, English learners, our students, again, of poverty, students who have often been underrepresented in our systems. A deeper learning pandemic pro tip. I really like this one. Justin, my colleague, wrote this one. That's why it has a math angle. Incorporate positive pandemic math into an inquiry project, such as calculating the amount of carbon saved in your town through less travel. I would say any kind of relevant investigation that your teachers can engage students in right now is a deeper learning pro tip. We want to spend some time, of course, with direct instruction and focusing on skill development around literacy and numeracy, but we also want to make sure to capitalize on non-structured inquiry learning time for all of the kiddos that we serve and with whatever supports they need in the home or in person to engage in that level of inquiry. I think another big post-pandemic silver lining will, and 21st century learning, so I'm not sure I would tie this one as directly to post-pandemic as some of the others, but 21st century learning, schools of the future, what schools can be, schools that are better than normal, will be those that really tune into the development of agency, empowerment, and voice on the part of all students. I have done a lot of research, worked really closely with other researchers in the area of student voice, and I think this is critical. The students who won the day when it came to March 13th to the end of the 2020 school year in the spring were those students who were the most agentic, the most self-directed. A friend of mine and colleague who, Tom Vander Ark, who wrote the book Getting Smart, former superintendent, has the best definition of student agency that I use, and that is agency is the opposite of helplessness. So whatever we can do in this time to help our learners, even our very youngest learners, to become more agentic and empowered and to direct their own learning, the better off we will be. And for me, that will be one of the finest silver linings in a post-COVID world. A pandemic pro tip here would be to think really seriously about student-led conferencing, whether that's virtual conferencing or face-to-face student-led conferencing. We've been working with districts all over Kentucky to promote student-led conferencing, and it is one of the most powerful agency developing experiences that our schools engage in. stepping up the pace just a bit, another big post-pandemic world, future of learning better than normal structure is around performance assessment. You all may have heard of the Share Your Learning movement. If not, Google it. It's got so many amazing resources, shareyourlearning.org. And as you drill through that site, you get all kinds of ready-made resources at your fingertips if you want to work with your school to present virtual exhibitions of learning, or when you're back face-to-face, in-person exhibitions of learning. Virtual or in-person student-led conferencing, and virtual or in-person presentations of learning. But the idea here loops back to that graduate competencies notion that if we want all of our kids to be creative problem solvers and global citizens, we can't test that in a pencil and paper kind of way. We have to let them develop evidence through their body of work around inquiry, projects, internships, simulations, go with mom to work kinds of days, whatever these real life experiences look like, and then prepare them to assess their own learning while we give continuous feedback about their development of those agreed upon competencies. It gets really exciting when you see all of these things come together. Another one of our elements is one that I know you guys spend a lot of time talking about, and that is developing a professional teaching culture so that you have the kind of empowered workforce that helps you get to all of these big shifts in education that I'm talking about today. And I've used an example here from Kentucky. It's KY Go Digital. Again, Google it. You'll find tons of information. This is a teacher-led, teacher-directed professional learning environment, mostly focused on technology, but includes leadership, support for kids of every ilk, lots and lots of teacher-to-teacher tips, and it's all free. It's all virtual, archived for your use at any time. A pandemic pro tip here is, what would it look like if you guys are moving into wall-to-wall PBL, use of passion projects, et cetera? How might you engage your teachers in virtual project tuning sessions, or how might you micro-credential their learning time in a virtual kind of way, 24/7, 365? So this brings us to another break. Get those typing fingers ready. This chatter break question is, of the Next Gen 9 that I've shared with you so far, and we didn't cover all 9 just in the interest of time, have a few more of those to go, but of what I've said so far, I'm not looking for praise or applause here, but would you spend a few minutes in the chat? Drawing down the menu again, all panelists and attendees, please. And share some reactions to these Next Gen 9 elements that I've talked about now. And I'll talk you through those as you begin to populate. But around graduate competencies, reactions, what are you already doing in that regard? What is the role of elementary schools in the development of that graduate profile, not just for 12th graders? What about professional teaching culture? Student agency, empowerment, and voice, performance assessment structures. Which of these might be happening in your schools? Which might you have more questions about? What other information might you share with one another in this quick break?
So Bridget mentions she's interested in learning more about virtual badges for students.
Excellent. That micro-credentialing, really, kids respond amazingly well to things like a digital badge. Teachers do too, by the way. So how might we provide opportunities virtually and face-to-face for kids to be working toward an investigator's badge, a thinking like a scientist badge, a family history badge? Those kinds of things become really interesting, and they are vehicles by which we as school leaders and teachers can funnel that curiosity into very productive learning experiences on the part of the kids. So thank you so much, Bridget, for that question. Colleen mentions that thinking about student-led conferences and professional learning experience resonated with her today. Professional learning communities and cultures, thank you for that. This idea about inquiry as the foundation across our content areas, I think, is critical to the way schools will evolve to become better than normal. Learner profiles with younger students. Thank you for that, Will. I had a teacher that I worked with who developed her own kindergarten profile of a graduate for her classroom, and her students were amazing about how they began to self-regulate themselves and one another as a team around those grad profiles. It made sense to them as well. Bridget's asking more about badging and micro-credentialing. Mozilla is the last system that I worked with specifically, Bridget, and it's my understanding that someone has bought them, but they really do pop up amazing numbers just on a Google search around micro-credentialing or badges for learning, and there are some awesome models out there. Some of them come at a cost, but I think they're easily replicated at the school level if that's something that you want to think about with your team. These can be interdisciplinary in nature. They can be content-based. They can be grade level. They can align with your service learning work that's happening at your schools. And adding the layer of the micro-credentialing ties back to students being able to understand how they are progressing around your competencies. It shouldn't always be you just tell them how well they collaborate or how well they communicate. They need to begin to understand that and self-assess for themselves. Great question. All right, so I've got a few minutes left before we open it up to Q&A. Thank you for that. Another big important element, I'm shifting now from the deeper learning pedagogical side to the equity, access, and opportunity side of the work that we do. So one of the key planks in our platform is that we must continue to move forward culturally relevant and authentic curricula. I love this invisibly visible comment here about the young African-American woman who said an invisibly visible 10-year-old who wanted to belong in her learning environment. That's how she described herself and finally found herself in a book called The Bluest Eye by Toni Morrison. So thinking about that experience for that young child in her final statement there is that became her connection to school that was hurt for the first time relevant. So this idea that culturally relevant and authentic curricula are real lifelines for students, I think, is an important thread. So a pandemic pro tip here is to have students write and tell stories about their own family. How did we work through the pandemic? What did we learn? What were intergenerational experiences that kids have here? And of course, you know that there are many, many hours that we could spend in seminars around this topic, but it's really important, I think, for us to make sure that we are moving forward in our thinking around that importance. And along the same line is around access and inclusivity for all of our students to these high-quality experiences that Linda Darling-Hammond talked about in the video. And this includes English learners. It includes our kiddos with disabilities. 14% of kids in the U.S. have been identified in those 13 categories of disabilities. And often by the very nature of identification, they have lost opportunities along the way. And so here's an example that we got from KY Go Digital and the two ladies represented here from Kentucky. These are Kentucky teachers who shared ideas about better meeting the needs of English learners and their families. One of their pro tips was record yourself reading challenging texts to your students, like making a mixtape in the old days, and then share that on a podcast. Here's an anchor.fm site that Justin shared for easy, easy podcasts. And then think about what that would be in turn after you've modeled that for the students, helping them begin to do that for themselves moving forward. This one I know is you're spending a lot of time on right now. I won't go into much detail on the positive, restorative, non-exclusive, and equitable school discipline side, but I did want to spend some time with you today talking about the social-emotional learning element of this next-gen shift. And that you will see again, I'm mentioning Fort Thomas schools from Kentucky again, and they are looking at weekly check-ins for their students so that every student has a touch with a guidance counselor, a classroom teacher, the principal or assistant principal or instructional coach, and that they spend not just laser focused on the learning that the teacher wants to ensure is happening, but also the social, emotional learning and wellness that their students need to be experiencing at this time. So what does your schedule look like this year, in person or virtual or hybrid, that ensures that students are having these social, emotional check-ins? How are you feeling? I know you guys are dealing with a lot of controversy on whether Zoom video cameras should be on or off, all of the things that our families are struggling with in this bizarre new environment. But through it all, the need to be sure that we are checking on the social, emotional well-being of our students is paramount. And then finishing up here, this again riffs on the one I just talked about, and that is, what kind of mentoring, advising, one-to-one supports are you putting in for your students and, frankly, for their families as we move into this very difficult fall? Some of the things we want you to think about is designating meaningful time each week, not only for the social-emotional well-being checks, but also some student mentoring and some time to focus on every child. A pandemic silver lining to me for the first time is that we really can make the world of learning and schooling very small for individual children in this time. And I think seizing the opportunity to do that is really helpful. Jennifer added in the chat that they're doing exactly that. Advisory every morning, virtual circles with students. That's exactly what we're talking about. Those kinds of structures that work for teachers, but they also work safely for kids and families and give them that opportunity for a really important check-in during an extremely stressful time. Morning meetings, even including parents. I love that one too, Gracie. So that I think a big takeaway, and we mentioned this in the advertisement, is that we have a changing relationship, at least an opportunity for changing relationships with the families and communities that we serve. Like me, you probably saw from March to May this kind of falling back in love with public education that many parents experienced when all of a sudden they found themselves isolated at home with their own children in a virtual learning environment. And I think we have to capitalize on the goodwill reserves that we built up in that time when people realized just how critically important we are in society today. So yeah, absolutely. And my message to you guys is one of optimism and hope. And I chose Rosie the Riveter and a modern day Rosie the Riveter to remind us, especially for the women in the group here today, that we absolutely can do this, and that we are the right leaders in this place in the right time to do that. Moving forward with our feminist message, we all need a little bit of RBG all the time, don't we? So Justice Ginsburg once said that generally change in our society is incremental. Real change, enduring change, happens one step at a time. And for our purposes, I adapted a little bit on RBG to say that for us, real change, enduring change, happens one child at a time. And I think that's where we are in the fall of 2020. Looking at these opportunities to really seize the day to emerge from this better than normal in all of our schools. Thank you for continuing to share in the chat there. I think that's very helpful. And I think we're hitting our marks pretty well here in terms of more questions that you might have, more sharing that you would with one another. So let's avail ourselves of the chat here for a few more minutes before I turn it back to Gracie to let these things marinate a bit. And what questions did they raise? What reactions? What kind of conversation do you want to have with me and with one another about what we're talking about today?
Lou,
yes, Gracie.
that I wanted to ask you to share. I mean, you're obviously very successful, very successful woman leader. What was some of the best advice maybe that you ever received as you kind of, climbed that ladder of success or made those career moves?
Yeah, so I talk with my students about this a lot, and many of my students in the principal program and the superintendent program are women, and I love the opportunity to mentor women, and I would tell you that some of the best advice that I ever received came from my female mentors. And that is, in itself, one of the things that I would add to my, at the top of my list, and that is find other women whom you trust and admire who can help you navigate this journey, because mom leaders have very different challenges, and we've got to be able to do it all, quite frankly. So how do we find balance in that work? How do we find some real advice, just-in-time advice, about how to make things work in a really, really overstretched schedule? Other advice that I've received over time have been, I asked a dear mentor of mine one time at the end of her career as superintendent, what she would have done differently if she had her career in school leadership to do over. And I get a little teary when I think about her very quick response. And she said, I would have listened to kids more. And that impacted me in a really powerful way. I mentioned earlier that student voice, empowering students is at the real heart of the leadership work that I want to engage in these days. And I look back at my career and realized that there were so many missed opportunities to engage students in very relevant, respectful ways. And so don't come to the end of your career and lament that perhaps you didn't listen to students enough. That's one of those things I hope will resonate with you even after the conversation today, because I'm always amazed at how perceptive and trustworthy and frank kids really are, even very young children. So that one meant a lot to me, Gracie.
And Lou, I also wanted to ask you, I know that principals are very drawn to looking at resources that are very practical, which you shared a lot of practical tips today, but a lot based on research, how that research is important because it provides the foundation for the best practice.
Yeah.
So I just wanted you to talk maybe a little bit about those people that might be thinking about getting that doctorate, maybe some words of encouragement or maybe what that did for you. I know for me that was a personal goal.
Yeah,
I was always really happy that I put in the time to do that, but I thought that might be good to hear your thoughts.
Oh, I love that question, and thank you for opening that door for me. My colleagues would be poking you right now saying, oh, no, you've unleashed the beast. But to the women on the call today, I would just echo what Gracie said about the opportunity to move forward with your education. I didn't complete my doctorate until I was 53. But I'm so thankful that I did. I'd always wanted it. I told my mom, who unfortunately passed before I completed my doctorate, but I told her this had always been a personal and professional goal of mine. And it has opened so many doors for me post-retirement. I did 31 and a half years in P-12 schools in Kentucky, and now I'm finishing my sixth year in higher ed and hopefully have many more years to go in higher ed as a professor. So the idea that we would be able to leverage continuing education in such a way that it fulfills us personally, I think, is really important. But you're opening foray into the notion that it makes us better practitioners because of the science and the research of the work that we do in higher ed, I think, is really important. I lament that I see often talk to principals who, frankly, have an anti-research bias because of adverse research experiences that they had somewhere along the way in their own schooling experiences or in their own career experiences. And I often talk with my team at the University of Kentucky that we've got to find a way to bridge research and practice theory and practice so that what we do at the university is of great value to our P12 practitioner partners. And I look for that as a partnership all the time. So whether it's participating together as grants, through professional development, really looking for research-based program choices, spending your money in a very smart, strategic way around what we know has the most positive impact on the malleable brain of young learners, all of those things I think are really important. So if you're like me and you have just the tiniest inkling to geek out on all of that stuff, then I would really urge you to think about doctoral studies and moving forward with the opportunities that you have in your career if you haven't already taken those steps.
And one final question. I know we just have a few minutes left, but could you talk a little bit about the work of the center at the University of Kentucky that you're directing?
Yes, thank you. And Gracie, I'll just send you chocolate afterwards because you asked me my favorite questions and let me talk more about things that really are important to me. Our center, again, don't hesitate to look us up, lead.school, is a center of the University of Kentucky College of Education. And we are an outreach arm for the College of Ed at UK. And Gracie knows that our former dean, who also used to be in Oklahoma where she is, started a very similar kind of a P12 program in Oklahoma. So we're much like that. The work that we do is to promote deeper, more personalized and equitable learning, like what I've talked about today, through professional development across Kentucky. We are very focused on Kentucky, although we do have partners from all around the country. But our goal is to help teachers really explore these things. So we train on project-based learning and how to lead deeper learning at your school. So it's very leader-centric. But we also talk about how to leverage passion projects to get to competencies, how to build your own school or district-level graduate profile. We spend a lot of time with our leaders talking about how they can tap into the experiences of their own students to make better decisions, more equitable decisions moving forward. So we host an annual leadership academy, and we also then work with districts on smaller district-specific projects all the time. Deeper, more personalized, more equitable learning for all kids. And all of those things, I think, yield this better than normal schools post-COVID.
Well, Lou, we have certainly appreciated you sharing your time with us today. I have learned so much.
Thanks.
And I knew that I would, but it's just so encouraging to see all of the good work that's going on around the United States, especially in the state of Kentucky, and that we have people like you that are helping us be better in what we do and in educating students every day. And so just want to say a big thank you for the work that you're doing. I know that you're very, very busy, especially being on your State Board of Education. These are challenging times for all boards of education in school districts and at the state level. But thank you again for being with us today and for sharing your expertise and love of education with us.
Oh, Gracie, thank you so much. And I just saw a message in the chat from one of my favorite people on the whole planet, one of my major professors in my doctoral work, Dr. Michael Chiricello, who's amazing. So it was lovely to hear from him. And I also posted a few references that I mentioned today to websites that might help you if they're of any interest to you. So thank you to all of our participants, and especially to Gracie and Honor and NAESP for inviting me to share with you all today. I certainly appreciate it. Thank you.